Pittsburgh Steeler fans, what's going on? This is Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, with you for another episode of The Standard is the Standard. That's the BTSC flagship podcast, and joining me as always is Lance Williams. Lance, no lid tonight, no glasses. What's up?
Hey, man, you almost drew me off sides with that odd cadence to start the show. Like, there was a pause, and you almost...
Well, there's a little timer on my screen, and I have to wait until it gets to, like, 2 seconds so that when we start, this show is actually starting. So it's kind of convoluted. But anyways, how are you doing, man? Haven't talked to you since the post game. What's up?
I'm doing all right, scrapping through. Stop messing with me with a hard count to start the show. I mean, hey, Steelers are already highly penalized. We don't want to commit a penalty to start the show.
Okay. Well, let's get ready for the show. And the one thing I want to mention, and, you know, this show is unique for a lot of different reasons. Not only is it pain and joy, it's also the fact that it's on Wednesday night. And so on this show, it's one of those situations where we might still talk about last week a little bit. We're also going to start previewing the upcoming game. You know, the Steelers preview, which is tomorrow night, Thursday night, that's going to be solely focused on the upcoming game against the Los Angeles Chargers. But we still might go back and we still might look at some things from last week. And that's unique. But I think that the biggest thing we have to talk about right now is, man, these injuries. The injury bug has crept up on this team in a bad way, and in my opinion, at a bad time, at a multitude of positions. And so when I look at the injury report from today, here's how it read. We know that Jalen Samuels had his knee scoped. He's out for at least a month. Now, I don't think they're going to put him on injured reserve. They'll probably save his spot for him because he's only going to be out for about a month, and this happens to be the month that they have their bye week, so he gets lucky there. Roosevelt Nix has not been rolled out yet. That's an upgrade for him, but he did not practice here on Wednesday. James Washington, reports were today, this was from NFL Network, that his shoulder injury will have him out. They labeled it as weeks, plural. So he did not practice today. Mark Barron did not practice with the hamstring. Justin Lane was sick. Marquise Pouncey got a Veterans Day off, not injury related. Vance McDonald with a shoulder did not practice. Steven Nelson with the groin was limited. I think that's good news because they're going to need him. If he can continue to practice at a limited or full-time basis, that's big. And then Anthony Ciccolo, everyone's favorite outside linebacker, was limited with a foot. But that's not the biggest name on the list. Everyone was stunned. Dave Schofield sent me a tweet, which was an image of number two slinging the ball around at practice. And I think everyone, including myself, was, holy cow, Mason Rudolph is practicing. Although, albeit on a limited basis, he had a helmet on, he had shoulder pads on, he was out there running plays. You saw the photos, Lance. What are your thoughts about Mason Rudolph first? And then I'll get your thoughts on the other injuries second.
Well, overall with the injuries, I think, you know, I've been covering football for a long time, been watching football for a long time. And I don't know why I thought just because they weren't playing good football and that Ben Roethlisberger got banged up and Mason Rudolph got banged up, that for some reason they weren't going to suffer injuries at other areas of the football team. I kind of felt like, okay, they've started bad. You know, they only have one win, that a rash of injuries somehow wasn't going to hit the club. And now you're like, wow, you're still trying to find your footing. Now you're dealing with injuries. But I think the news about Mason Rudolph has to be good news. But given what you said on the last program, the Standard of the Standard, it's still wait and see. It's very early in the week. Things could go left. Things could go right. You never know. You just kind of have to wait these things out, and hopefully he gets through the protocol.
Right, and one of the keys is that he does have to go through, and it's like my wife said, you know, when on Monday when he was in the facility, I got home from work, and she said, hey, how's Mason Rudolph doing? And I said, well, he was at the facility. She said, really? And I said, yeah, that's a great sign that he's not sensitive to light, loud noises, because I'm sure they have music in the locker room. It's not agitating his brain. And so I guarantee you they started him on the protocol on Monday, and they probably put him through a very standard battery of tests. And then How do you feel on Tuesday? Feel good. All right. Tuesday, we're going to put you through a little bit more strenuous test. Wednesday, how do you feel? I feel great. And all these steps, the only thing is, and there's no way of getting around this, and Hines Ward actually said this when he played, players can lie their way back onto the field. Unless they are physically, you know, dizzy and something that's obvious. If he doesn't say that he has headaches or anything like that, there's no way for them to know. But nonetheless, if he's following the protocol and he's being honest and he's not lying to get himself back on the football field, he looks like he's on track to be cleared to play. Last week, Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen did not practice, I don't think, until Friday. He was in the concussion protocol, and he got cleared and played on Sunday. Now, different set of standards, considering he played all last season, and he's an entrenched starter. But for this situation in terms of concussions, it's possible that he could start on Sunday. Does that make you comfortable or uncomfortable, Lance?
I mean, as long as everybody's being honest about the young man's health, namely, like you said, starting with himself, if he's being honest with himself and the medical staff is being honest with him and giving him the right information, then I'm fine with it. But before we move on, I want to give props to the missus, man. She asked you about a Steelers player's injury. Yeah. My wife would never ask about a player's injury. Like, whatever, dude. Like, So big up to Mrs. Hartman.
Let me just say that, you know, my wife, you know, the more kids that we've had, and we're done, by the way, the more kids we've had, the more difficult. She used to love sitting and watching the Steelers with me, and she would always give Ben Roethlisberger so much crap because he over-dramatized a lot of injuries. You know, she always laughed when he was – one time, it was when he had that spinal concussion. Do you remember that game? It was against Cleveland. It was late in the season. He went down there to carry him off in the stretcher, and all of a sudden you see the thumb goes up.
Yeah, I do.
And she's like, oh, my gosh. And then in 2014, the – crazy playoff game in Cincinnati where his shoulder, he gets banged up. Perfect slams him into the turf. And then he, I was like, oh, here he comes. Here comes Ben on his white steed out to save the day.
you know, when you're a star, when you become a star, a celebrity, so to speak, part of that definition is knowing when the camera is on you and being able to give you that moment. He has been great at that.
He was great at that. But when she was watching the game when Rudolph got hit, and it was scary. I mean, just as a human being, seeing someone laying like that, you're wondering, is this some? I mean, hell, I mean, is he dead? I hate to say that, but that came across my mind. He wasn't moving completely. I mean, it was crazy. So, it's one of those situations where Rudolph will obviously see what happens if he goes backwards. So let's say tomorrow he doesn't practice at all. That means that he had a setback, and that means that he had headaches. That means he had blurred vision, sensitivity, whatever. And he has to start all the way back over. And so he won't be playing that Sunday. But if he tomorrow is a limited participant again, or a full participant, he's on track to play, period.
You know, Dave made some comments on, I think it was the Stat Geek Show, big up to Dave Schofield. And he was talking about if you felt that Hodges was a better player than Mason Rudolph, that you were just absolutely crazy and absolutely nuts. But I don't, and I agree with that to a certain extent. I think Mason Rudolph is the better player. He gets more snaps, has more pedigree. The organization feels a certain way about him. They see him in a different light. However, I think what the Steelers need is they need a jolt at quarterback. They need somebody to inject some spark and some energy, and they need someone who's going to take a chance to push the ball downfield. So I don't think that Hodges is better than Rudolph. I just think for what the Steelers need right now, Hodges might be the better guy, a guy to take some risk, a guy to not be so safe with the football, because they need a jolt. They need an injection of energy on that offense. They need something to get excited about. So that's what I think people were seeing when they saw Hodges come in. They saw the energy. They saw the energy in the football, him pushing it downfield, trying to make plays. You saw the bad decision when he tried to throw, you know, against his body, and he thought he was 7 feet tall, but he was only 4'3". But hey, the energy was there, and I think that's what people gravitated to.
Would you suggest that we were saying the same exact thing in week two after Mason Rudolph came in for an injured Ben Roethlisberger and played pretty well?
Yes.
I'm just saying, let's keep it all in perspective. So yeah. I think that I personally, if he is 100% healthy, I think that Mason Rudolph gives him the best chance to win. I'm not saying that Duck and Devlin Hodges, we'll call him Duck. I'm not saying that Duck can't get the job done, because there's an article that's going to be published tomorrow morning on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com by Jeffrey Benedict, one of our writers, who did a 5 plays that show the Steelers the good and the bad from last week. And he really broke down in GIF form how Mason Rudolph is not as good of an anticipatory thrower as Devlin Hodges, something that you had said to me, Lance, when you were watching the film. And you can see it clear as day in his article about how early in the game, there was one play where James Washington was open down the seam, and Mason Rudolph almost waited until Washington turned his head. And by that time, the defender had broken on the ball and made a play on it. It fell incomplete. Whereas Devlin Hodges throws the ball before you look. And that's something that Rudolph's going to have to get. He's going to have more anticipation in his game if he wants to be successful in the NFL. But I think Mason Rudolph is a more complete quarterback. Yes. But at the same time, I think they could win with Devlin Hodges, because I don't think there's that big of a discrepancy between Rudolph and Hodges at this point.
I mean, you've heard the old analogy. If you're good looking, you don't got to be too nice.
Yep.
That's sort of the analogy that I put between Mason Rudolph and Hodges. Hodges has some physical limitations athletically. Because he has those limitations, typically with arm talent, he's probably had to be an anticipatory thrower his entire career. And to get to this level, he's had to become a master of it. So he has to throw guys open, and he can't wait because he doesn't have the arm strength to get it there and not anticipate. Early in Ben's career, he was pretty much sort of like Mason Rudolph. He was an anticipatory thrower. He wanted guys to get open, but he was physically talented enough to be able to do that, so he could still get the ball in those tight windows. Hodges is not a guy that can do that, and that's why you see him more advanced than Mason Rudolph. Rudolph has a good enough arm to not have to do that. He's going to have to learn to do that because he doesn't have a Mahomes arm. He has a good arm, but he doesn't have a Josh Allen or a Mahomes rocket arm where he can wait as long as I've seen him wait on film.
Yeah, and I do think it's gotten better as he's continued to play. And I think he will continue to improve in that area as he gets more experience. Because people have to remember, he's essentially, when it comes to on-field experience, he's a rookie.
Yes. You know,
I mean, he didn't even dress in 2018. He stood in street clothes and held a clipboard and ran the scout team essentially the entire season.
Let's put it in this perspective. Faker Mayfield is a number one draft pick, and he stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy had a higher pedigree, Heisman Trophy winner, better player overall. And we see how Faker Mayfield is struggling with the clowns. So let's be patient with Mason Rudolph. He's going to have to play more football to develop that rapport with the wide receiver core that honestly isn't super talented and is now down his most familiar target in James Washington.
But at the same time, he never threw to James Washington. So I think he threw to Deontay Johnson most. But a quick sidebar here to break up the monotony of the Mason Rudolph talk. Didn't know that Antonio Brown, Mr. Third and Fifth, is a fan of the show. He gave us $1.99 and said, I need a job. I don't know. I can't help you in that regard.
Hey, we need more money than that. Because you're about to win that grievance. So if you get your chips up, we need some M's and you can join the show.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the other injuries real quick before we go on to some other burning questions we wanted to tackle in this show. Other injuries of note, I mean, Jalen Samuels being out for a month likely means that Trey Edmonds, that's Terrell Edmonds' brother, will probably get promoted from the practice squad possibly. And you might see your boy Benny Snell a little bit more. or you know, James Washington's shoulder could have him out for weeks. That could mean Dante Moncrief gets a helmet, and or Ryan Switzer sees more time at wide receiver. Between those two positions, running back and wide receiver, Lance, which one the injuries concern you the most?
It's got to be the wide receiver position, because Switzer is not an option at wide receiver. He is not a good player. The electric Mr. Electric Football Man should not play on the offense. I mean, it was so bad in the game. You could faintly hear it on the broadcast. You could hear fans cheering for touchbacks.
Yeah. I mean,
that's how bad it was.
Well, so, but that wasn't him. That was Johnny Holton in the opening kickoff that took it out 2 yards deep. That wasn't Switzer.
Well, we have enough evidence of Mr. Electric Football Man not providing anything. So I think it's the wide receiver position, because, I mean, you have young, very young players playing. I don't think Juju this is one of the questions we'll jump into. I mean, that wide receiver core is not scaring anyone. Put a professional wide receiver on the field who has a pedigree and a history in the league and Dante Moncrief, better known as Dante Moncrief. I think he was struggling because of his injuries with his hands. He has good film that he's put on tape that people have seen throughout the league. He's a more accomplished receiver than anybody on this roster outside of Juju Smith-Schuster. I think he needs to start, and he gives them the best chance to win. On the running back position, you have a guy that's a Pro Bowler. He's not playing really well. I think that's largely due to the fact the offensive line has been struggling, but he is a Pro Bowler. And actually, I think Edmonds honestly should get more snaps than Benny. No Jets. Because I think he's a bigger guy, more physically dynamic, and I think he's a guy that really can actually pound it in between the tackles if they need that. The issue, of course, is pass protection. Can he pick up blitzes, and can he keep a young quarterback safe and feel safe back there in the pocket?
No, I agree with you on all fronts in regards to it. You're 1-4. You know, I mean, you're 1-4. Moncrief's had the worst start maybe ever of a free agent in a new location, whether it was the preseason where he caught the one pass and fumbled it away, or whether it was the drops in weeks 1 and 2, the second of which week 2 was an interception. All reports that I've read coming from people that are watching practice state that he's had good practices, that he has looked good, like they're giving him opportunities and he's showing out. Now, this tells me that either he's Justin Hunter 2.0, who would make all these plays in practice and was never able to put him on the football field when it mattered, or he's kind of getting over this pressure that he felt as the free agent acquisition, and maybe he's ready, and maybe this is the chance that he needs. So the Steelers, we talked about it on the post-game show, or maybe it was last week, where they don't need to cut him right now. Everyone talks about they need to cut him so that they can get their third-round pick for Le'Veon Bell. They don't need to do that right now. They have until week 10 to do that. And so if you have a spot available with James Washington out of the lineup, put him in there, see what he can do. Maybe he can help your team. And if not, there you go. You know what you're going to do with him.
Let me tease the question to you, Jeff. What does he have to do to not get waived by week 10? Like what numbers? Give me some numbers.
In terms of season or a game?
You know, just up until this point, up until week 10, until the time that they have to make decision. Give me like a catch total, yards, and maybe yards per catch, maybe touchdowns. Throw me a stat line together that would make you feel comfortable with not waiving him and getting that third round pick back.
Okay. A lot of it isn't necessarily based on numbers, it's based on what I see or what I would be seeing. And for me, I would want to see him be a good red zone target, somewhere where they've struggled this season. And maybe he's, even if he's like that Jericho Cotri type, when Jericho Cotri had, I think it was 10 touchdowns in a season.
Jericho got TDs.
And it was just that 1 year, and he turned that into a giant contract with the Panthers. Kudos to him. But that was his bread and butter. And if that's Moncrief's bread and butter, like, I'm fine with that, you know? But if he can stretch the field a little bit, if he can take some pressure off some of these other guys, he's going to have to make some big plays. So in terms of receptions, I would look for him to have, you know, 4 or 5 receptions a game. He would have to have.
So that's what
he'd have to have a really, for his recent history, he's going to have a really good catch percentage. I don't want the freaking drops, you know, if it's thrown and it's catchable, catch the football. Like, that's it. And so the catch percentage is going to be important to me. Touchdowns are great, but I mean, he's going to have to fit in, and that's going to be tough to see because I haven't seen him yet.
You know, Dave's worn off on you.
That's a non-committal answer. I understand that.
Dave is worn off on you. He's like, you know, the answer you gave is like when you ask a guy if he likes her, and he goes, well, you know, she's sort of nice and da da da. And you just go all in, the guy just can't say, yeah, I really like her. You kind of danced around.
Okay, so if you want me to be blunt, I don't know if this guy can do anything to stay on this team. Like, you were asking me about specific numbers, so I'm trying to get you numbers.
Yes.
And I can't get the images out of my mind of these just horrible, horrible plays when it matters the most. And so for me, it's I just don't know if it's possible, but that's just me.
Okay. There you go.
You asked. That's the answer I would have given you, but you asked for specific numbers. And so
how many games left? So how many games? So they got
There's week six, seven's a bye week, so that's out. Right. Eight, nine. He has three games.
So he's got 3 games.
4 weeks, 3 games.
3 games. He'd have to get. It's gonna be tough. I'd have to say I'll put it at yards per catch. I think he'd have to average over 15 yards per catch, where he establishes himself as a guy who can stretch the football field. Because I don't think he's going to get a ton of targets to be able to get the catch number high with only 3 games left. And the fact that they're playing 2 guys that are really inexperienced. But I think if he can stretch the field and his yards per catch can be above 15, I think you keep him.
Okay. That's interesting. Really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what the Steelers do here in the coming days in regards to the injuries, if they make any moves on their roster, who would be going off the roster if they have to bring someone up. Mason Rudolph practicing right now means that they wouldn't have to make a move to bring up Paxton Lynch if he's deemed healthy enough. They don't have to make that move right now, but that'll be coming by Friday, so keep an eye out for that. All right. Now, you alluded to the wide receivers. And this is a question you wanted to have answered in the show. So we have seen now, if you go back to week 17 of last season, and you include now the 5 games of 2019, 6 total games with Juju Smith-Schuster being labeled as the guy, the number one, the person that people are scheming towards. Is Juju Smith-Schuster a number one receiver in your opinion?
Let me ask you the question first, but let me read you something from an article that I got from that I read from The Athletic, and this kind of sparked the question for me. And this is the quote: a number one receiver to me is someone who can take over a game, someone you need to double cover the whole game. Like Julio, you have to have a safety over him the whole game. And the minute you don't, he's going to run by you and take it home. Another GM thought true number one wide receiver should be able to win matchups on the perimeter while showing enough versatility to play effectively from the slot as well. He has to have very good speed, at least not necessarily always size, but the athletic ability and explosiveness to change a game. Another GM said a true number one must be able to beat zone or man coverage consistently. Quote, to be a number one, you have to be able to make contested catches because we have to be able to throw the ball to you when everybody knows it's coming. So in hearing those different definitions by GMs, do you think Juju fits that bill?
I honestly... Without Ben Roethlisberger, it's tough for me to even answer this question because I don't know, and I'm not going to lie and say that I watch all this film and I'm watching, zeroing in on number 19, every offensive possession, you know, his lack of production that he's had so far, because he's had some big plays, so he's put up some numbers, but let's be honest, his production is down. I don't know if that's due to the quarterback situation or if that's due to him not being able to do all the things that you just said. Personally, I really do have to kind of take this as a bye a season because let's see how it develops as the year goes on. If Mason Rudolph stays the guy, because I see him open. I really do. it doesn't mean he's always getting the ball thrown to him. This is more difficult of a question than the Dante Moncrief question, based on the fact that I think a lot of it depends on who's throwing the football. It's just like if you go back to Mr. Third and Fifth and his time in Pittsburgh, how many touchdown catches did he catch from someone not named Ben Roethlisberger? None.
You know,
and so when he wasn't in there, you're asking yourself, okay, this matters. I think, you know, the quarterback matters. So that's my non-committal answer here. I think he is capable. Yeah. I think he is capable of being a number one, but it's going to be tough to see that this season unless he and one of the two quarterbacks remaining really develop a rapport. Do you agree or disagree with that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I disagree, and I do agree that you were non-committal. You're you're Dave on Jeff Dave Hartman, the Reverend Dr. Jeff Dave Hartman. According to what I read in those quotes, I would say Juju is not a number one. And I'm going to use your answer as the reason why he isn't. You're a number one if you're a number one, regardless of who's playing quarterback. Now, you may not have number one production because your production is going to be impacted by who plays the position. If you have the guy from the Jets, what's his name, Falk, playing, you know, I don't care if you're Jerry Rice mixed with Don Hutson, mixed with Randy Moss, whatever, and you have the best traits of every wide receiver possible, you're just not going to get balls. But what you are going to see, and it goes to the first thing that the guy said, the GM said, is you're going to demand double coverage every snap, all the time, consistently. And that's the thing that you did see from Mr. Third and Fifth. He may be all these other adjectives that we've liked to say about him, but he did draw double coverage consistently. You had to game plan to take him out of games, and he still did produce. Now, his production, of course, was aided because he's playing with an eventual Hall of Fame quarterback. But to me, like that quote, coverage shows if they respect you. And right now, Juju's getting singled up in a lot of instances. So it's coverage, right? Like if they are committing an extra body in the passing game to take you out of the game, and that happens week by week, you are absolute number one. And you got to be a physical freak and all that other stuff. You are a number one. Like Julio is a number one wide receiver. Like absolutely no question about it. Michael Thomas is a number one wide receiver. Third and Fifth, when he's playing, is a number one wide receiver. I mean, those guys are
DeAndre Hopkins.
Absolutely.
Tyreek Hill.
Ooh, yes, but absolutely, yes.
T.Y. Hilton.
No.
Okay, see, he's one of those guys. It's like I would put him and Juju in the same area.
But DeAndre Hopkins is almost every description that I read in that athletic.
No, not DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah, T.Y. He's on the edge.
He and Juju and me, Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes, number one wide receiver, not number one production, but Odell was everything that you mentioned, everything that I read in those quotes. Physical freak. Demands double coverage, makes tough contested catches, athletic marvel, great route runner, trouble, diva, and all that stuff. He has all the number one wide receiver attributes.
Keenan Allen that they're going to face this Sunday night.
Not a number one, but probably the best number two that you could absolutely be. You know,
Shocked that you just said that. He's really good.
Yes, he is. I saw a lot of Keenan, Cal football. You know it.
You know the story. We saw a lot of him last year in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field, too. So.
And the numbers. I looked at the old game book in preparation for this show. Woo. And I watched every single target of his in that game, and it was a bunch of them. It was pretty ugly.
Well, they got him on John Bostic. Why wouldn't you throw it to him every time?
They got him on everybody, and he was open almost every time.
Do you feel, and this is a good segue into kind of talking about the upcoming game a little bit, do you feel that the secondary this year, with the addition of Steven Nelson, if he's healthy, he's dealing with a groin injury, Minka Fitzpatrick at safety, Joe Hayden seems to be healthy, the shoulder doesn't seem to be as big of an issue as it once was, you think this secondary is better equipped to handle a guy like Keenan Allen, say, than they were last year?
Yeah, I think this is the best secondary they've put out in years. I mean, across the board, particularly now how they're using Hilton and Cam Sutton, how they're using Cam Sutton kind of on passing downs, and they're kind of using Hilton as that guy to blitz and kind of drop out. They got to be a little less predictable about how they use Hilton, but how they're being, how they're creatively using the best attributes of both of those guys. And Cam Sutton is playing good football. And Steven Nelson, unfortunately, because the Steelers have started off so slowly, he's played really well this year. He's played really well. So I think this is their best collection of talent in the secondary, with Minka and Edmonds and even Cam Kelly, who's playing better in limited snaps. So I think this is the best unit they've put out there. And I think more so now, I think they can handle him a little bit better because they have Bush underneath and Barron, two guys that might be able to run a little bit better with Keenan Allen when they try to get Keenan one-on-one with linebackers where he's running option routes and those type of things underneath. So I think they're better equipped to deal with Keenan Allen and this Charger passing game.
It's definitely going to be interesting to watch, and it's that's just one of the many matchups in this game that can cause some pause when it comes to predicting the game, which we're going to do that in a second. Before we get to that, let's go through another question that you wanted to talk about, and I agreed 100%. You said that outside of the injuries, and we've talked about injuries a lot this show, what is the biggest reason the Steelers are 1-4?
And I found this on Twitter, and I don't know who it is. I want to give them credit, but I forgot who it is. And this is what made me think of the question, but I want to read their answer because I believe in the answer 100%. It's the inability to create points off turnovers. And since week 3, the first start of Mason Rudolph, the defense has created 10 turnovers. The offense has turned that into just 25 points, 6 TDs and 6 field goals and 1 touchdown. Bottom line, with those amount of turnovers that they're generating, if they turn those into points like a team that has a veteran quarterback typically does, they're not a one-win team. They at least win a couple more games in that mix. And I think that's the biggest issue, is the inability to score and convert turnovers into touchdowns.
Well, and if you look at the takeaway stats, they're tied with the Patriots top the NFL with 12 takeaways. One team's 5-0, one team's 1-4.
Let me add to that, Jeff. They're also second to that team up north in sacks.
Actually third.
Third with 19 to that team up north, 23.
And the second place is Carolina at 20.
So, I mean, when you put those numbers together, 19 sacks, what did you say, 12 turnovers?
12 takeaways, yeah.
12 takeaways, and you've got one win? That means you've got young quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, and that's what they do. I would say take it a step further, because I do think that although that the defense has been a bright spot, if there is such a thing with a 1-4 team, situational football, they struggle. You know, the costly fumbles, red zone conversions, which you're kind of referring to there. And Dave talked about it on his show last night, and that is the growing theme and trend of the Steelers when they score a touchdown, have a big drive, absolutely, the defense surrenders something right after. And it's backbreaking. Yet that's situational football, in my opinion. And you've talked about it a bunch, about how the two, offense and defense, have to work in concert. And so they haven't done that yet. They have not been in unison at all, not once. There were even times in the Cincinnati game, the lone win, where they didn't look like they were on the same page. So that's going to be a work in progress, but I agree with you. Points off turnovers is a huge statistic that doesn't get talked about enough, and it's killed the Steelers. Just look at San Francisco.
I mean,
gifted points, and you just couldn't take them.
Let me go to the situational and talking about how they work in concert. And I don't have the rankings. I need to update my sheet, so the rankings might be a little bit off. But at the point of the Bengals game, in terms of third down offense, they ranked 30th in the National Football League. Now, in terms of third down percentage defense and getting teams off the field, at the end of the Bengals game when they got their first win, they ranked 23rd. That tells you right there, in terms of situational football, and we're not even talking about red zone stuff, just on third down, it shows you just how inconsistent this team has been when it comes to situational football.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where it's just...
it's a UU situation.
the team is... I mean, my gosh, they've lost what? Their last three losses have been by a combined 9 points or something like that. I think I saw that statistic. I could run them in my head real quick, but it's still one of those, like, man, I can't believe this team is one of the strangest teams to talk about because they're 1-4, but it could easily be 2-2. Or I'm sorry, 2-3 easily. They could be 4-1.
You're correct about the 9 points. You're correct. 26, yeah. They lost 28-26. They lost 24-20. That's 6 points. They lost 26-23. 9 points. There you go.
The winning in the NFL is a razor thin margin. And it's what you talked about. I loved how you put it when I was going off about the end of the first half of the Ravens game, how they ended up not using that timeout and time management was an issue. And you said, look, the little things equate to wins and losses in the NFL. They're not doing the little things right.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing we forget at times is these guys are immensely talented. These guys have been immensely talented since they've been like 9 years of age. I mean, we're talking about the best of the best. We're talking about elite, incredible athletes. And when you put a number of those guys together with very smart coaches and a ton of time to prepare, best believe it is a razor thin margin to win in the NFL because you are going up against the best of the best. And you just don't have a ton of plays to give up in games unless you're just ultra elite and you have studs in some areas, which it just gives you some margin. Like if you have that guy up north, possibly the GOAT quarterback, that guy is going to give you a little bit of wiggle room because even if you're not playing so great, he's going to give you a chance to go out and get you 35 points so he can clean up some of the mistakes that you've made. So it's hard to win. And you know, when you're in the straits that the Steelers are in with injuries and with rookie quarterbacks, you've got to play darn near perfect football.
And they're not doing that. They're not doing that, obviously. So let's talk about the upcoming game a little bit. Let's switch gears and talk about the Chargers. The Steelers go to the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday Night Football. Yes, another freaking night game.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, a Sunday nighter. And then they go into their bye week after this. And then obviously they will host the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. That's another great Monday nighter. After the Steelers and Bengals, they get Steelers and Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dolphins are trying to lose games so bad. They want you to just start drives on your 40 on the, you know.
Just kick it out of bounds on the kickoff. So, okay, a lot of Steeler fans are thinking that if they could somehow find a way to win this football game, they go into the bye, you have the Dolphins coming after. If you win those two games, next thing you know, you're 3-4, depending on how things shake out. We've said it before, it's a one game season for the rest of the way out. Let's see what happens. Let's, for the prediction part of this, let's assume that Mason Rudolph is cleared and is able to play and is healthy and is his usual self.
No, okay. Let's do that.
Yeah.
But let's also be bigger and better because this is the standard. So let's give a Hodges and a Rudolph prediction.
Okay. All right. Okay. So let's before we get to the prediction, Lance, what are your thoughts on the Chargers this year? They're banged up too. Mike Pouncey, Marquise Pouncey's brother, just put on injured reserve today. They've got a bunch of other injuries too. So what are your thoughts on the Chargers as a whole?
You know, when I looked at the Chargers last year, I thought they were just incredible. A big physical team. What's the safety's name? Derwin James, is that the safety's name?
I think so.
That's injured current. He was big and physical, just a monster. I mean, you got Bosa, you got Ingram. I mean, you had Keenan Allen, you had both Williams receivers, Gabriel, Ekeler, Gord. I thought they were just a big, really big physical athletic team. For some reason, I mean, the biggest change in the team is the lack of James. You kind of see that on defense. It's weird. The one issue with San Diego, and that really helps the Steelers. And let me give you a stat here after I make my point. Their offensive line is inconsistent. And I think that's the biggest thing that's holding this team back, because they're talented. They got an outstanding corner in Casey Hayward. They're talented in a lot of different areas, but they're just struggling, I think, offensively, because their offensive line isn't playing well, which lines up really well for the Steelers. I think the Steelers have great matchups with Watt and Dupree against Tevin Scott. I mean, you're looking at a team that's given up 11 sacks. You're looking at a Steeler team that's got 19 sacks. I think their Steelers have a distinct advantage with being able to get after this offensive line. Schofield is an average guard, so I think the Steelers can really get after Phillip Rivers. But, you know, overall, it's just, you know, sometimes years are different and guys just aren't playing as well as they typically do. But I still think the Chargers are a very talented football team. By the way, Jeff, we haven't said San Diego Chargers until I just said it.
I was going to say, you just said it. What are you talking about?
It's great. I mean, we were terrible last year.
Yeah. Doing it. Well, that was our first year out of San Diego, so that would be tough. I think that the one thing that the Steelers should be happy about is that they're not having to chase Lamar Jackson around this week. If Phillip Rivers is as close to a statue back there as you'll find, and he might tuck it every now and then if the Red Sea parts in front of him, but if you get past that offensive line, he's not moving much. And so he's a timing quarterback, and obviously he's been in the league as long as Ben. They were in the same draft class. Steeler fans know what they're getting when it comes to Phillip Rivers. They're coming off a loss, though. They're coming off a loss to the previously winless Denver Broncos.
Which is a bad thing for the Steelers.
If you're into that type of thing, yeah. I mean, some people don't put too much stock into the, you know, who they played the week prior. If that's the case, maybe the San Diego, maybe the Los Angeles Charger fans are saying, oh, crap. The Ravens beat the Steelers in overtime. Now they're going to be pissed off coming to the West Coast.
The only reason I say it is that, you know, when teams lose, I'm not saying they coach better. I'm saying that I think they coach harder because they really try to turn over every stone and try to really figure out what went wrong in that previous game. And they really try to correct after losses. Not saying that coaching staffs don't do that, but teams really try to not lose two games in a row. And I think that Los Angeles Charger game was at home as well. So
last year?
No, last week when they lost to Denver. I think it was at home.
I'd have to check. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it was at home. So that's another tough thing. Coming out to the West Coast, you know, trying to really not lose back-to-back home games. Definitely going to be a tough test for the Steelers.
It is going to be tough. So let's get to predictions here, Lance. What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, I think the key to the game is really getting after Phillip Rivers. You look in that game against the Ravens, I thought they could have had probably 10 sacks against a regular guy. You know, a regular guy that wasn't that elusive, they could have probably had 10 sacks. And we have not seen them dominate a Ravens offensive line like that in quite some time. So they're really playing well up front. I think this is a game where they can get after Phillip Rivers and get a lot of sacks. I think the key is Ekeler, and I think it's Keenan Allen. What are you going to do with those guys? I wrote these numbers down from the last game. Those guys were targeted 27 times, and they had 20 receptions for 170 yards in that game. Keenan Allen was targeted 19 of those times, 14 receptions, 148 yards, and a TD. How are they going to defend Ekeler and Keenan Allen? They're going to try to get Keenan Allen on linebackers. They're going to try to get him in some positions in the slot to really go after the Steelers. I think that's the key on defense. If Devlin Hodges plays, they have no chance to win the game. Making your first start on the road, facing off against a guy that's probably going to be in a Hall of Fame, it's just a tough spot. It's just a really, 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 really tough spot for Devlin Hodges to win. So if Devlin Hodges is the starter, I think they get beat, let's say 24-13. I don't think they score too many points. Plus, with some of the injuries that they're having, with Samuels out as well as Washington, I think with Hodges, it's a really tough spot. With Mason Rudolph, I don't think it's equally as hard, but I still think it's very hard, in particular because of those injuries on offense. I think the defense will play well. I think the defense will get sacks and will turn San Diego over. Because one thing that Phillip Rivers will do is he'll try to squeeze some throws in there. I mean, he's Moxie. He's a capital M when it comes to Moxie. I mean, he's gonna put that ball in some tight spaces. I say all this, my long-winded answer is I think they're going to lose regardless of who starts. I think it'll be a closer game. I think they lose if Mason Rudolph starts 27-24 in a really highly contested game that goes four quarters. I think the defense is good enough to play very well against San Diego. The question will be, you know, will this defense get gassed out because they're not converting third downs and doing that type of stuff? So I think it's going to be a very competitive game. If Rudolph plays, I think it's going to be a struggle if Duck Dynasty starts.
So you're saying even if Mason Rudolph is healthy, is back to his 100% the way he was heading into week five,
right?
That they still lose.
I think they lose a tightly contested game.
Okay. And by the way,
really competitive.
And by the way, the loss last week was at home for the Chargers. So yes, they were in LA last week. I checked. Okay. So Lance takes the Chargers. Now, the 2-3 LA Chargers, I don't think they're anything other than what Lance said. Offensively, you have Phillip Rivers, Eckler, and Allen, and maybe Melvin Gordon if they're starting to infuse him back into the lineup too. And that's cause for concern. I'm not downplaying that at all, but I'm not impressed with their offensive line. Defensively, they have some people that can get after the passer. They've got Bosa. They've got Ingram. That is his name, correct?
Yes.
Melvin Ingram, yes. He's still out there? Okay.
Coming off a hammy. He was out last week.
So you never know. I just think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are a team, like we mentioned earlier, they've only lost their past three games, total of 9 points, and they're in these close games. Here's the difference, in my opinion, between what's going to happen on Sunday night and what's happened on those previous other losses. The defense is going to take matters into their own hands. I actually see this defense scoring points in this game. So they're going to, you know, you talked about Phillip Rivers. He's a gunslinger. He will try to squeeze the ball into some very, very small, tight windows. I can see a pick six. I could see a strip sack possibly picked up and taken back to the house. I think the defense is going to say, you know what? Our offense is banged up. We don't know who our quarterback is right now. You know what? It doesn't matter who our quarterback is right now. Climb on. We got you. I think the Steelers win by the same score. No, check that. I think they win 27-24, right?
Yes.
I'm going to say they win 27-23. The Pittsburgh Steelers go out west. I'm going to say that Mason Rudolph starts, and I think he plays well. He doesn't light up the scoreboard. It's a very typical stat line for him. I think that he is someone that's not going to turn the ball over. He'll make plays when necessary. And I think that even if Delvin Hodges plays, it could be a very same thing. I think the defense, though, is going to be the underlying theme here. They're going to be the ones to win the game. Someone's going to make a big play that's going to tip the scales in their way, in their favor. And I think that they're going to go into the bye week with a little bit of momentum, come out of the bye week, play Miami. And next thing you know, this team's going to be 3-4. You just don't know what's going to happen after that. So there you go.
Let me add this. They better tackle Desmond King.
Well, they better not kick it to him.
Yes, they better
don't not kick hit to Mr. Barry, Jordan Barry. I know you listen because I know I'm your number one fan. Do not kick it to that guy. Period.
No, because because his return in last year's game changed that entire game. He ran that back, and it was a wrap.
So did the constant offsides by the right tackle that was never called.
Yes. But the Steelers can eat, man. That front can eat in this game. That San Diego offensive line is not good at the tackle. That offensive line is very inconsistent. And the funny thing about a lot of football that I've watched, there are a lot of average offensive lines in the National Football League. There aren't too many good groups. So it's going to be an interesting ball game. No, I'm not making the trip down to San Diego, Los Angeles, needless to say. But I think I have a cousin or two. I think my mom might be going to the game.
A lot of this game actually, believe it or not, reminds me of the Bengals game in regards of the offensive line is shoddy. They do have some playmakers. Now, the Bengals didn't have A.J. Green, but Joe Mixon is a good running back, and he's a dual threat type of back. And Gio Bernard is that guy that they would use in the special packages, and Tyler Boyd. And I'm not saying that Andy Dalton is Phillip Rivers, but at the same time, you saw what the Steelers front did to that offense, period. Dalton couldn't do anything. 8 sacks. I'm not suggesting they do that, but I think that's the type of output that I would say that I expect from the Steelers. So there you go. Let's do a couple questions here quickly, Lance, before we call it a show. The first one is a question that we both kind of posed to one another. And after watching the Cleveland Browns on Monday Night Football get absolutely shellacked. They got their doors blown off. First play of the game, literally.
Yes. You know what that reminded me of? When I went to a Steelers-Raider game and I got there, it took forever to get in. And the first thing I see is Troy Polamalu chasing a quarterback.
Terrell Pryor.
Exactly. And everybody was laughing and screaming and going nuts. And the first thing I do is go, it's going to be one of those.
So, and that's exactly what happened. The question is the AFC North the worst division in the NFL?
Very close to being it.
I'm curious to hear who you would say is worse, because I'm thinking in my head, I can't think of one.
AFC East is worse.
Well, you have the Dolphins and you have the Jets, Patriots. The Jets are bad.
Garbage. But the Bills are
4-1.
Yeah, the Pats and Bills kind of rate. Yeah, it might be the North. The North is pretty bad this year. And I think it's because every offensive line in the North has an issue. The Steelers can't run the ball. And I wanted to ask you that when you were breaking it down. Do you foresee Connor being able to run the ball better in San Diego? Steelers can't run it. Browns can't pass protect. The Ravens can't pass protect. And the Bengals line can't do anything. So the offensive lines are trash. Are just inconsistent in particular areas across the division, which I think is making it very hard for anyone in the division to get some footing. Also, you've got 3 guys that have not played more than 2 seasons starting on 3 of the 4 teams. You got Jackson, you got Rudolph or Hodges, or Faker Mayfield. So you got inexperienced quarterbacks and you got bad offensive lines. I don't know. I might have to switch it. It might be the AFC North. Might be the worst division in football.
I think it is. I absolutely think it is. Because honestly, the team that's leading the division, I don't think they're that good either. I was not impressed with the Baltimore Ravens when they were in Heinz Field.
Think of it this way. They got their doors blown off by the Clowns. Yeah. At home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, so we agree. AFC North is now the worst division in the NFL, and that's okay, whatever. Maybe it makes it easier for the Steelers to have a remarkable comeback and make the playoffs at 8-8. Who knows? The other question that we want to talk about is, Lance, what do you think about, I want to ask you especially, What are your thoughts on these? I really don't even want to use the term reports. We'll just go with rumors that the Washington Redskins are interested in bringing in Mike Tomlin. And so everyone's immediately thinking of trades because there has been a coach trade when Tony Dungy was axed and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers traded with the Raiders to get John Gruden. So what are your thoughts on these rumors?
It was weird. I just woke up to it and I was getting blown up on my phone. Like, did you hear the rumor? I was like, what rumor? If Washington were to offer the Steelers a first and a second round draft pick, given whatever the quarterback thinks, you make that move. So if Ben is fine with it, and if the compensation was a first and a second round draft pick, I think you make that move. Because if the season goes in a direction that it's going now, not only did you get Minka this year, you're going to get another high draft pick, and you're going to get a high second round pick, and you could bring in another coach, and you could kind of restock the shelves and really move forward with this rebuild. But I don't think that Ben Roethlisberger would sign off on that, because I don't think he's interested in rebuilding at this point in his career whatsoever. And just like, you know, when you've been married to your spouse for like 25 years, you might not like some of the stuff she does every day, but you don't want a new one because you got to learn a new one. So
if anyone's in the live chat that remembers what the Tampa Bay Bucs traded for John Gruden, I'd be really interested.
Dave, where's Dave Schofield? I know Dave.
He's in there. If someone could look it up quickly, it would be great. But if it was even close to a first-round pick next year, I guarantee you, depending on how this season ends, the Steelers will entertain it. I'm not saying they'll pull the trigger on it, but they'll entertain it. Because it all comes down to how you're going to better your team. And let's be honest, it kind of seems like the writing might be on the wall that they might be kind of done with him anyways, and all the antics that have gone on. And if he's not, oh, Dave Schofield said three firsts is what they traded. Three first round picks.
Ding. Ding. Sorry, Mike. It was great while it lasted. Bing, bing. It's a business. Don't take it personal. And I'm not even calling the quarterback to see what he thinks. Three firsts. Bing, bing, bing. See ya.
Yeah. That would be interesting. It would be interesting.
If I could get three firsts, we could do it right now.
Right in the middle of the season. Just
we could do it right in the middle of the season. So I can make sure that first could be, that one of those firsts could be as good as it could be. Bing, bing, bing.
There you go. All right, man. It's been a good show. We've talked about a lot of stuff.
Really crisp show.
Yeah. I thought so too. We actually had a plan. You know, didn't just freelance it. We knew what we were doing. Look at us. Yeah. Maybe the Steelers have a plan this Sunday night and they'll actually come out and win a game. We'll see. But just a quick reminder that tomorrow night, Thursday night, will be the Steelers preview podcast. And then Friday night, Lance is, yeah, I said it. What is the topic for that one? Do we know yet, Lance?
No, I do not. But I could talk about, you know, this whole, you know, Tomlin thing to the Skins, because, man, three first rounders.
So Dave is now saying he's amending his previous comment, saying two firsts and two seconds, actually.
Bing, 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 bing. That's even better. We'll get four players. Bing, 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 bing. Yes, absolutely.
So, Gotta go. Well, maybe that'll be the topic for his, yeah, I said it. And then the burning question will be with Dave this week. And it'll be on Saturday at some point in time. And Sunday night, way late for me. And it won't be too late for Lance on the West Coast. We will be talking about the Steelers. Hopefully, they finally win and head into the bye week on a positive note. We hope that you stick with us no matter what. We will be here no matter what. Win, lose, or draw. Every single week, we'll be here every single step of the way. So stay with us. Lance, why don't you send us off?
Listeners, as always, tune in, tell a friend, and subscribe.
Amen, brother. We'll see you next week for another episode of The Standard is a Standard.